You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 121. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ Colangelo.
What's up, what's up, what's up?
Yeah. Also joining us, I guess, is Brad Henderson.
I mean, I'm in a good mood, and I usually am grumpy, but you know what? Fuck you.
Thank you.
We're reunited. You. It's a good night.
Totally.
Yeah, it's been a little while, right?
It's been a lot of while. It's been a spell. But,
been some time.
You know, it is what it is. Today, we're just going to get down to brass tacks and raw dog it. We're going to go straight into some vinegar syndrome, our vinegar syndrome extravaganza.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll pick up on what's on our doorstep. I have some fun stuff to talk about next week. But, in the matter of time, I mean, Vinegar Syndrome has been putting shit out like crazy. We're a little bit behind on covering their stuff. So today we'll be covering their September package and their October package.
Mmm.
All packages. About October packages.
Heck yes. So what we're going to do is I kind of wanted to lump all of the adult cinema stuff into one segment at the end. So we'll discuss their, you know, the September and October releases in no particular order as far as their like horror titles go or exploitation. And then I want to start up a segment called Behind the Black Curtain.
Ooh.
For the Vinegar Syndrome episodes. So
it was actually Red Doors when I was growing up.
Was it Red
up.
Doors for you? For me, in the VHS store, it was basically a closet covered in a black curtain.
Mine was a beaded curtain.
Yeah.
Like a disco shiny one.
Nice.
And what was weird is that in the closet, it was pornography and horror films. So I guess you know why I turned out the way I did.
Yeah, mine was, what do you call like those, like old timey bar Western doors? What are those called?
Oh, really? They had the...
Oh, like the swinging doors?
Yeah.
It was doors. So you
there's
could
an
be,
actual name for that.
What were they called? Western swinging
doors? I have no idea.
Well, I was trying to be all like fucking smart and shit, but you know. I couldn't think of it.
Hey, stick to what you know, Brad.
The Western swinging doors, they were, so you could see the bottom, you know, for me, I couldn't see over the top because I was, you know, young, but I could still see the bottom. And then when they would open, you could catch like a glimpse. And I very first noticed it because we didn't have it that I can remember in Florida. So when we would visit Ohio, they had Video Time up there. And in every Video Time, they had a pornography section and it would be through those doors. And I would like linger because it was always near the horror section. So I would try to link. Is Noah joining the show? Noah's joining
the show. He's crashing the show.
I like it. Does he want to talk about Video Time and Red Doors? He's not old enough.
By the way, they're called saloon doors. We're just dumb and didn't think of the most obvious name.
So the saloon doors, I would, you know, they were at actually every store, and I would just linger. I was always in the horror section anyway, but I would like linger near just so if I could catch a glimpse of, the front of boxes. But every once in a while, they would slip in the horror section some kind of softcore horror porn, and I would grab those like accidentally. Because I would think that they were horror films, but they turn out to be like somewhat, you know, pornos, like Dracula Sucks, which Vinegar Syndrome released. There's another title I've mentioned on the show a couple times called Midnight Intruders that I was really into. But yeah, man, I miss those days of like trying to like peer into there. Now it's just like I open up my computer and it's my homepage. Weird. But anyways. So are we going to call it Behind the Black Curtain?
That's what I was going to call it. I mean, if that's fine with you, it doesn't matter to me, man.
I feel like it, like the, maybe the back room or something.
The back always, room?
Yeah, like the okay. back room.
Yeah, yeah the okay. back room.
The back room.
Okay. Even when, like, after we moved to Florida, a lot of video stores didn't have that, but we found one. There was this other video store that opened up, and I was just searching one day, and this is like when I was a teenager, and I was with my mom, and like, you know, I'm going past, like, going to the A section, getting down to the Z's, and then all of a sudden there's, like, this other door. And I was like, what the hell is this? My parents started renting from there, I found out.
Have you been to a Family Video lately?
I was at a Family Video when I actually visited you when we were in Ohio. I went to one, but I didn't see anything there.
Because what they do, and they're like these – secret doors that you look at it and it looks like the door to a utility closet or, you know, employees only or whatever, but there's a very small little placard that's like must be 18 or older to enter, and then you walk in there and it's completely closed off from the rest of the store. It's very similar to how their video game section is set up, how that's usually in like a little pod, but the only difference is that it's not open for people to just walk into. It's closed with a door, but Family Video definitely has porn. But it's always some, like, bootleg, like, sketchy shit. Like, it's never anything good. Like, it's the stuff that has just been turned into tube sites at this point. but we went in there just to see what they had, and nothing great. Nothing worth renting.
It's a sound of disappointment.
Yeah. I was really excited. I was like, holy shit, this still exists. Oh, this is
lame. Like those, like, you get the 8 hours compilation videos and stupid shit.
Yeah, like they don't have they don't even have fun parodies, which you think they would. It's all just like,
you know, there's a lot of money in that. You would think that there would be some, I'm sure there is, but not even around. I mean, obviously it's illegal around here. But, I mean, if you actually have a store that sells and rents, like, newer porn and parodies, let us know, because I would like to know if stores are, you know, video stores are still doing that, if there's money in it, you know, because you get everything for free, basically, on the internet now.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I'm kind of curious if there's – I mean, you could do that with movies, too, but porn's just different because – going out and renting porn, you're showing your face. You know, you could just do it at home now and, you know, at your own privacy. Which, you know, there's that thing. I mean, going out and renting a movie is no big deal. But I remember, like, you know, when I worked at Blockbuster, we didn't have porn, but we had some soft core stuff. And then on the top shelf, you know, we had the Girls Gone Wild videos. We had a lot of those. And people, men would rent them constantly, but it would be like super secretive. Like they would come in like early morning or super late at night and like just hold their head down. And it was like, dude, don't you have anything better? Like watch real porn. Like why are you watching this, you know, kind of dumb shit?
I'll buy porn from people and just like slowly put it on the counter and just look the cashier dead in the eye and like never break eye contact. I think that's funnier. Like you remember my face, you know what I'm into now.
Awesome. So we'll call it the back room.
Yeah, that's true.
So that'll happen closer to the end of the show, so that'll be some good time for all. I'll do a special little intro,
little sound intro.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could use the Vinegar Syndrome music because I think they sent that to us, right?
Yeah, I've been using that to introduce the segment. But
we have permission to use it.
Yeah. We'll do something. This time maybe not, but I'll whip up.
Maybe
something,
this time, maybe not. Sean.
Well, I don't know if I'll have time. I want to get the show out to everybody, but I mean, you know, if I have time, I will. But by the next show by the next Vinegar Syndrome show for sure, I will have a special intro for the back room.
Just rip some like moaning off of like Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
Oh yeah.
Throw it in.
Yeah.
There you go.
It'll be fun.
Saucy Pizza Girls.
All right. So let's see here.
We just jump right in. I don't think we even need a like decipher if it's October or November. They just need to buy both.
I just have the website up and
you're gonna be all fucking professional.
Yeah. Let's jump into 1973's Count Dracula's Great Love.
Oh man, you're like blowing your load like quick.
This is directed by Javier Aguirre.
Wow, dude. Aguirre. Just don't even do it.
Sean still can't read.
Jesus.
Awful. What's the pronunciation? Do you guys know?
No, I'm not going to try.
It's probably Aguirre.
Probably. Javier Aguirre.
I always like, but that's Aguirre. Still incorrect.
Javier Aguirre?
Aguirre, yeah. That's,
something like that?
I could be butchering it, but I went to school with a girl whose name was, instead of the E, it was an A, and it was pretty similar, so I'm guessing.
That's a pretty good guess. I should guess better because I live in Southern California.
I think you do a good job.
Yeah, I'll get better.
That was like anyways. The most ever been.
So, this is a film very much in the same vein as kind of the Hammer horror type.
Sean,
huh?
No way.
Like the 70s. Like, what am I thinking of? Like,
just
Countess
because it's
Dracula?
A vampire film in the 70s.
Dude, yeah, I always say Hammer. Yeah,
I mean, it's
far,
like Hammer. This
far
is
from
España all day.
Okay, not Hammer. What am
this
I thinking
like
of? Am I thinking of like
Euro
the Redemption?
Trash.
Euro Trash. Okay, Euro Trash.
This is Euro Trash.
Yeah. Okay. It's a vampire. Like, I always lump these vampire flicks, especially the 70s ones, all together because I really dig them.
It never has like this gothic like darkness to it. This movie
has
lights on everybody.
Yeah, it's pretty bright.
Like and blood, it's just so fucking trashy.
I love the brightness of like those dresses that they wear.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Where it's like they look like fucking Easter bonnets, and it's just all pastel, and just, pow, I love it.
Yeah, and there's fucking red everywhere, and the blood is red, too.
So the plot, what's the plot is basically this carriage breaks down, these women and these gentlemen, what year is this? This is what, the, like,
1995.
No, this is like the Victorian, right? Era. Yeah. 1700s, we're going to guess. 1800s, something like that.
I don't even think there's a
probably
date.
In Spain.
I don't think there is either. It's just classic vampire make things look old.
Yeah. It's a fucking castle. There you go.
So they basically, the carriage breaks down to castle.
I think you said carriage. I think that like solidifies that it's like 1700s, 1800s, somewhere. Before cell phones.
Little do they know, of course, that the doctor, Dr. Marlowe, is what he goes by, but little do they know, but we know he might be Dracula.
Count. Might be or is.
Dracula.
This is what the Vinegar Syndrome calls the full strength unclothed export version.
That's a very fair assessment.
I've never seen otherwise. This is the only version that I've seen. But yeah, it's definitely Eurotrash, a Spanish Eurotrash
release of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm asking DJ because she probably knows.
The what?
There is a, what was the, did you ever watch this on VHS? Because I watched it on VHS a long, long time ago. Because I was like into vampires and I was like, oh man, this is going to be like John Carpenter's Vampires.
I never watched it on VHS, but correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't this have an alternative English title at some point?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's something like, you know.
I think it's like Cemetery Girls. Maybe.
Cemetery Girls. Maybe. Oh, wait, no, I'm thinking Cemetery Sisters.
Yeah, no.
Cemetery Sisters.
Because I vaguely remember seeing a movie.
There's something with another title.
Cemetery Girls or something. And I want to say it was this, but I never actually watched it. Just based on.
Yes, BJ, you were correct.
Oh, I'm so good.
The great Google has rewarded my searching.
But yeah, I never picked it up, but I vaguely remember seeing the cover for that and thinking like, oh, that would be sweet, and then never watching it. But like the images from that reminded me of stuff that I was seeing watching Count Dracula's Great Love, so I just assumed it was the same thing.
So they had cut this down probably as Cemetery Girls to about 74 minutes, and it was rated PG apparently. So I'm
oh shit, okay.
Yeah, so I'm assuming all the sexy time.
Assuming yeah, a lot of different things
was added, was actually recut back in. I think Code Red released this on DVD, and now
Code Red's been all Code Red
Do you think Code Red's DVD had them chained up by their arms? Is that PG?
Well, it was 87 minutes, so I'm assuming it was a little more.
Ooh,
cut,
maybe.
Or 83 minutes, but I'm not sure how much this what this
is. The boob. It's the boob milk. That's what the milking thing, right? I read that in the book too. Let me read it.
I
think it was towards the end. Here, wait, give me a second.
Remember any? Milking.
I actually read this book, but it was pretty fun. apparently, 15 minutes of scenes were excised from the Spanish version, including a fellatio scene with a cross and the milking of blood from a female breast.
Hmm.
As it is, the uncut export version of Dracula movie contains some of the most perverse scenes brought to a vampire film. Maybe they're talking about something else, because I don't remember that in the movie.
No, I do not.
So
I don't either. That's why I made that. What?
Yeah, well, I believe that was in there.
That sounds like Bone Zone.
I probably would have written it down. The only note that I wrote, because I did get caught up in the movie. I really dug it for what it was. Like I always dig these, you know, 70s Euro trashy vampire flicks, like Countess Dracula and what did Scream Factor release?
Vampire Lovers?
Vampire Lovers. All those flicks. Like, I know, there's something about them I like. But the only thing that I wrote down in my notes was the the opening scene where the guy gets the axe in the face and falls down the stairs. They put that on loop for like 20 times over the opening credits. It was ridiculous. I don't understand why they did that.
They were very proud of that stunt.
Yeah, they're like, this is where all the budget went on this stunt, actor or stunt man. So we're going to make it, you know, we're going to make our money's worth. But it's just repeat over and over again over the opening credits. I just died. Anyway, that's the only note that I wrote down. I was going to try to be all like.
It's the only note you wrote down?
Well, yeah.
Did you write down Hammer Movie?
No.
That's a pretty sick burn.
Yeah, I haven't seen this in a long time, and honestly, when I did see it, I was probably fucking bored out of my mind because I was expecting something else. Because I did werewolves and like vampires and zombies. Like when I saw like Dawn of the Dead and Lost Boys and all that other shit, I was like, oh my god, every movie's gonna be like this, and it wasn't. And it was like, it didn't hold my attention. So, but it was fun because years later, after rewatching this stuff, I ended up liking movies like this more than, you know, fucking, you know, all the other highly blockbustery, you know, famous werewolf, vampire movies, zombie movies and stuff like that. But this one, I enjoyed watching this time, mainly because I just kind of like the dirtiness of the film. And, you know, if we can talk about Paul Nash, he's been in so many fucking Euro horror and trashy movies, a few werewolf movies, you know, vampire movies. And he's not really a skeezy guy, but he, like in real life, but he portrays like, he has this like really dirty quality about him that I've always really enjoyed. Like he's not like the perverted like uncle or something. Like even in this movie, he's not like perverted or anything like that. He's just like ladies like him. He bites them. He likes to look at boobies, and he's got fucking brides around him. And I think it's a pretty straightforward movie. I think it's just really pretty to look at, because watching these kind of Euro trashy movies in HD brings kind of a new light, because we're not watching it on gritty VHS that's probably, you know, duped and bootlegged. You know, we're watching, you know, kind of the original, how it was looking in the theater more than likely. So it's really fun to revisit these kind of really shoddy movies that were, you know, kind of DIY in a way, because I don't imagine any of these movies, these Eurotrash movies, being big productions, because most of the time they were ripping off something that was popular at the time, ripping off, you know, Spanish films were ripping off the Italians, Italians were ripping off Americans, all that type of, you know, backstory with it. But, I mean, that's just my two cents. I don't know how BJ feels about Count Dracula.
I really like it, but what I kept thinking over and over again, because I can never dislike a movie for what it is, I have to look at, like, its societal context, because I'm a millennial, that's what I do. I found myself wondering why we don't talk about Paul Naschy, or Naschy, Naschy, it's Naschy, yeah?
I think it's Naschy, yeah. I always Naschy. Say Naschy.
But why he isn't brought up as, like, one of these great figures in the same realm as Lugosi or Chaney. Like, obviously, hardcore historians are going to bring him up, but he did everything. Like, he was a wolfman. He was Dracula. He was Frankenstein's monster. He was Fu Manchu. Like, he did fucking everything. And yet, like, watching this, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I know this guy. What do I know him from? And I was like, oh, that's right. Everything. And I don't know, that just kind of like bugged me a little bit. So I'm hoping that maybe because Vinegar Syndrome is such a popular company and because people really trust them with their taste and what they deem worthy of releasing, that I'm hoping maybe that will bring people, you know, more attention to his filmography. So then that way they can
expand their
palettes. I don't know. Like, I really did enjoy this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. I like that his last line, like, of, you know, calling her name made me think of, like, Candyman a little bit. which is, like, a stupid comparison, but whatever. But yeah, I think that it looked really, really nice. And I think what I like most about Vinegar Syndrome releases is that they make the films look good to what the films should look like. Like, it doesn't feel to me like they're just trying to put everything on the same level. And it's like, this all has to have the same sense of clarity and the same color correction and the same whatever. Like, they make sure that the films play to the best that they absolutely can based on how they historically should look. And I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that.
They keep the integrity of whatever they're scanning in mind, you know, whether it's...
Yeah.
35mm, and this is,
And I
can't
watched
tell that, I don't know, inner
one.
Negative, inner positive, I don't know, inner negative, but yeah,
sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, go for it.
I was saying, I pretty much just binged everything that we needed to do, and I watched this one between two of, like, the 1980s films, and it was just really kind of, like, a head trip a little bit to, like, watch like the colors just jump so much between all of it, and I was like, God, they really know what they're fucking doing. Like, this looks great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I really like it, and I think if people like Eurotrash, they'll enjoy it. I highly recommend people to look into more Spanish cinema, because Spanish cinema is really cool. It's really, I think there's enough different about it than, say, you know, like the Universal versus Hammer debate. I think Spanish is definitely, like, in a league of its own, and it's
colors are more vibrant. It looks prettier. It doesn't look, because I like the way that, you know, the Universal and Hammer films look, of course. I'm a fan of those. But there's something with kind of the vibrant colors and cinematography that, I don't know, it's just a little prettier to look at. Like, I like the gothic look, of course. But
I think that it's a good way to bridge between, you know, like, Western cinema and, like, Italian. I think Spanish is, like, a nice, like, entryway. If, like, you don't want to completely throw yourself into Italian cinema and have your fucking head explode because you have no idea what the hell is happening and there's just so many colors, go to Spanish. It's it's an easier transition.
Yeah. Awesome. But no, I agree. I think some people, like, look at this and maybe think it's a, you know, a hardcore film, and it's not. It's just, just a Euro trashy movie, so yeah. There's no P in the V. Well, there is, you just don't see it.
Well, that's one of the things that I miss, is I miss films that just happen to have sex in it. Like, and that's a
film
like
you don't see it anymore.
Right, it doesn't happen. Like, it's either they can't allude to it at all, or it's porn. Like, there's no, hey, here's a movie, and surprise, there just happens to be sex because it, quote-unquote, makes sense for the story. Maybe one day.
Yeah. I noticed that even, like, when I went to the theater and seeing movies, like, in the 90s and renting movies, there's, you know, because when I wasn't allowed to watch it, I closed my eyes. And I remember that a lot. But there's no sex scenes anymore.
It seems like the only directors that do it anymore, like Cronenberg, is throwing that stuff into, you know, his newer movies, and like those directors. But I don't know. I remember like Steven Spielberg threw that into Munich, you know, like a sex scene, or like, whoa, you know.
Man, you just don't see it.
It
much
doesn't happen. Yeah, but it doesn't happen often. It just happened. Like everything's like we're gonna. Do a character development moment about how angry he is as he has sex with his wife because he's an assassin, you know, that kind of stuff.
Wow. What movies are you watching, Sean?
Well, no, that was Munich, and then and then one of the other ones, one of the Cronenberg ones. Which one was that? The one that was based off the graphic novel.
I don't know.
Ed Harris and. Viggo Mortensen was in History of Violence. Yeah. They totally like fuck on the stairs. They're like sex scene on the stairs, and it's like, but you're right. Most R-rated flicks, you know, these days don't. Yeah, they just. I mean, it was.
Well, there was always a time where you know they were at a motel and it was really well lit, and you know it starts. You know, starts at the bottom of the bed with their feet like moving around and. You know, fucking Wham playing in the background, some sensual song, moving up, and you see, like, the legs intertwining with one another, and then the covers just happen to cover his butt or her butt, and, you know, it raises up, and you kind of don't see her nipples because her boobs are always pressed up against his chest, but then she lifts up, and then he puts his face in her boobies. Like, those were, like, natural sex scenes, like, in the
90s. Settle down a little bit, Brad.
No, I'm just saying, scene in the 90s, and now you don't see that at all. There's like no, like, there's just nudity. There's no sex scenes between the, and the thing is like, it's almost like those are the, like, bad people or something now. Like, before it was the heroes having sex.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's, now you just don't see it at all.
Dude, you had it in freaking Backdraft. You had, like,
well, that's awesome. What I'm saying. Even
Jennifer Jason Leigh and one of the biggest
blockbusters of all time had these sex scenes, but now, I mean, I don't know if it's to get people in the theaters because we just want PG-13 movies, you know? Because I don't know. Something
basically
changed.
Basically, we need
more
mainstream fucking.
Yes.
All right.
Need something.
All right, let's move on to these. There's two flicks by Richard Casey.
Oh, okay.
Let's
move right along.
What order are you going in?
I'm on our website with the announcements for September. Then I'll move on to the announcements for October. I'm just kind of going down.
Gotcha.
But I figured we'd talk about these two together. Since I was changing around my office and I had my TV, I just got it put back up today. I did not get to Horror House on Highway 5.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was the
you
last
missed
one.
Missed out.
I know.
You
so I want you guys to tell me what the fuck I missed out on. I'm going to watch it this weekend, but in time to record the show, I did not because I just mounted my TV on the wall today.
You mounted it?
Mounted that TV.
You would mount it.
But yeah, Horror House on Highway 5. I believe this was his first film?
Yeah. He's only made like three movies.
Cause he also did, Hellbent, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But this looks like a straight up, low budget, you know, slasher type flick. But, Brad, I'll let you introduce this thing.
Oh, okay. Well, Horror House on Highway 5 is directed by Richard Casey. It was released on Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, actually, here, let me grab it. I was excited about this one because this was a VHS favorite. When I was younger. I know I've never watched the sequel to this film that Richard Casey has made. I guess it's a sequel.
Horror House on Highway 6.
Yeah, he made it, like, I guess in the 2000s or something.
Oh,
like
that sounds like a terrible thing.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to see it because I never knew who, like, I knew that he made this movie. I never saw Hellbent. That was a first for me for watching that. But rewatching this and then watching the fucking interview with him, like the interview with Richard Casey on Horror House on Highway 5, maybe the best thing that Vinegar Syndrome has done. It's very memorable. It's comparable to the interview with the neighbor from the Slumber Party Massacre disc when he just like starts going crazy and starts reading poetry and shit. he's not reading poetry, but Richard Casey is a very eccentric person. And he is very happy with these movies. He loves these movies and he loves the people that he worked with. He's also maybe just a tiny bit crazy.
Do you think somebody who would throw in a line that says, "Look at you, you've got a boner," isn't a little bit crazy? I'm just gonna throw that out there.
So between a Nixon mass killers and fucking, you know, some Nazi shit, this movie kind of has it all, and it's really fucking weird, and it's just a good time. Like it's one of those, like, it reminds me, it might have even fit better if it was shot on video. That's kind of like a good way to explain like what you see. Like, it reminds me of like cheap, weird shot on video movies, but they just happen to be having a 16 millimeter camera instead.
Well, looking at that, I mean, that's looking at the pictures and screenshots of it, that I totally got the vibe from that for sure.
I want to have a triple feature with Horror House on Highway 5, Elves, and Hard Rock Zombies, and do like a Why Are There Nazis marathon. Or,
oh my god, that would be great.
Like, and all of them have kind of that same aesthetic of like, but really, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
Oh, sounds like election 2016. What the fuck are Nazis doing here?
It's
sorry, got a little boogle.
It's just, it's very, it's ludicrous, is what it is. And not the, you know, what's his real name from Fast and Furious? I don't know. I was trying to make a ludicrous joke. I just failed.
Oh, God.
I actually don't know his real name. He's just
Chris Bridges. Man. Chris Bridges.
Oh, there you go.
Wow, that was a really bad joke. I am so sorry. but anyways, like, it's incomprehensible. You can't even understand what the hell is happening. Like, it's just scene after scene after scene, and it's just goofy shit that's happening. People are dying. People are being held captive. The scene where she's getting away and she's like dancing with her hostage, like, I'm like, oh my god, like, who
thought
of this?
Can we discuss too that it is like the most unsettling Nixon mask I've ever seen?
Oh my god.
Like, I don't understand why it's so much scarier. Like, I have a Nixon mask in my living room, but for whatever reason, this one, like, it's too rounded and I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, everything's odd about the film, but it's just, it's the charm that Richard Casey has in these films. I mean, Hellbent's definitely, you know, well made for its time and budget, and you can kind of understand it a little bit more. But yeah, with Horror House on Highway 5, I mean, if I remember correctly from the interview, like, they filmed this over a period of numerous years. So you have to think that continuity-wise and story changes, Like, they are just like, do we have enough money for this scene? Probably not. Let's just shoot something else since we're all here. That's kind of what it felt like. And then it's just all pieced together to complete, you know, 80 minutes, 90 minute movie. And then they just slap it in theaters. It gets picked up because it's a horror film. And then that's it. And that's the film. And they kind of like even talk about that with on Hellbent with the special features, because it's like, oh, I made a movie for this much. I made this much. Hey, want to do another one? And he uses the exact same people too. Like most of the people that are in Whorehouse and Highway 5 are in Hellbent. But, you know, it's just one of those things. It's that guerrilla type filmmaking where it's just like, I have some money. The movie industry's hot right now. Anything's going to sell. Anything's going to be put on the shelf because companies are dying to just pick up anything. I mean, look at the films that were made in the 70s and 80s. I mean, mainly the 80s. Like, shot on video stuff was getting into Blockbuster. Like, there's no way in fuck you're going to get a shot on video movie into fucking, if Blockbuster still existed, you're not going to get fucking five copies of a shot on video film in a video store unless like it's super popular and it's like kind of a, you know, hipster video store or, you know, something that's like, you know, not that Balkan or anything's like hipster, or those stores that carry everything. But it's just not going to happen. You're not going to go into a video store and see fucking Massacre video titles by, you know, the dozens on the shelf. You're going to see maybe one copy. But Whorehouse on Highway 5, back in the day, there could have been five copies on the shelf because it was a new release. So that's kind of part of it, has the charm. And, you know, they actually did make an enjoyable film. It is a little batshit. It obviously is strung together as the best as they can. And they did it. And that's what I love about it. And they took the money, and Richard Casey actually had a good head on his shoulders. He's like, let's do another one. And he actually made something that is a little bit different. But he has – what I like about Hellbent and Whorehouse on Highway 5, yes, they're completely 100% different movies. But there's this – I mean, if you see Hellbent, you'll know what I'm talking about, even though that's basically a punk rock movie. But there's a punk rock attitude of making these movies too.
Well, because like, Richard Casey was he did music videos as well.
Right, right. In which he has like as the special features on these movies too.
What time do you have where you actually get to watch special features?
Well, I don't usually. Like, I'm not a special feature person. If movies come bare bones on Blu-ray, I really don't give a fuck. But every once in a while, because I heard someone say on a forum or something, the special features on Whorehouse on Highway 5 are great. And so I plugged it in because I wanted to see it. Because that's how I knew about the Slumber Party Massacre interview, was that somebody said something. And so I just watched it and I was like, holy shit, this is solid fucking gold. Like, I mean, I think he's a little bit egging on for the camera a tiny bit, but it's very enjoyable. And then, of course, being that these films were released back-to-back, obviously they did interviews back-to-back, so I watched the Hellbent one, too. Which is, he's more toned down, but he definitely is kind of going crazy on Whorehouse on Highway 5.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't have time for special features that much anyway, but normally, like, I'll try to catch up with them since they're just kind of documentaries, like, as the kids are running around, and I'll throw something on. Like, it took me a while to get through the Chopping Mall one feature and then the Waxwork one, but I got through it, you know, as my kids were running around. I'll kind of piecemeal them, pause it, take care of the kids, come back, finish watching it as I'm doing something. But, yeah, I mean, I used to watch a movie, and then I used to rewatch the movie with commentary, and then if there's a featurette, then I'd watch the featurettes.
Yeah, see, I know a lot of people
that's
like
some
that.
Serial killer shit.
this was I was single and had no life at all.
No, but I don't think it's
not saying that if you watch special features, you have no life. That's not.
I don't think you're a serial killer. It's just one of those things that, you know, people like dissect the entire disc, and a lot of people are like that. And that's another reason why, you know, Scream Factory, Shout Factory is so popular, is because they do stack these full. But all I care about is the fucking movie most of the time. I don't care about special features, but if special features consist of shit like this, then I'm always down.
Sometimes the special features can save a movie for me. Like, I didn't like Bud the Chud 2, but I bought Chud 2 because of the, you know, how these Vestron video collections have been. And I wanted to hear the director explain himself in commentary. So, like, sometimes it'll be worth a purchase for me if the special features are good enough, you know, depending on the film.
I'd like to say that we're like 45 minutes in and we've talked about 2.5 movies. Yeah.
So, Hellbent, Richard Casey's next flick, basically the story of, you know, a Faust type story. They get this rocker, punk rocker. Basically, sells his soul to a gentleman by the name of Mr. Tannis. If you rearrange Tannis, you might spell something else. Santa.
Wow, Sean. What a fucking spoiler.
So, punk rockers offer the deal of a lifetime, and, you know, basically it's this, you know, kind of the story of what happens from there. And I mean, it kind of plays out for me kind of like any music documentary I've seen, or if you read about any band that kind of got a taste of fame, you know, any of these guys kind of will go off the deep end here and there. Although, but this one, of course, there's more of a supernatural element to it. But, I love this flick, man. I'd have a hell of a time with it. I actually dug the music. Like,
yeah, the music's really
great. The band's playing, and I'm like, oh shit, these guys, like, this is actually, like, good. Like, it's not, like, you see some of these rock and roll flicks, and the band's okay, you know, or punk rock flicks, and, you know, but it's actually pretty good.
I admittedly got through 65% of it and then passed the fuck out because it was the last one on my binge and I couldn't do it. And then I woke up in the middle of the night and the DVD menu was on and I was like, ah, fuck.
Hey, it's got a great DVD menu. That song's killer.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
But yeah, that's you know, Richard Casey and like even like Whorehouse and Highway 5. Like the music's great. The music videos that he did. There's a music video on Whorehouse and Highway 5. But like, yeah, I mean, it's like I like this is very similar to me. Like as if Punk Vacation actually had music in it.
Yeah,
that's what this feels like. Like it feels. It's just another DIY movie. That's all it is. But it's, you know, has this really punk rock attitude. It's, you know, just coincidence that we're dealing with punk rockers as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the whole thing that goes hand in hand. Like, even if you took the music out of it, you would still have a punk rock movie. And I like Richard Casey's attitude. I just wish he would have made more movies. I mean, I think he's only made 3, like I said, which, you know, between these two, they're completely different. I really do love it. I think Hellbent's great. I do like Whorehouse on Highway 5 more because it's more my speed, but I do kind of like that, like there's something with, when was this movie made? Hellbent?
It's, 88, I think.
See, this feels like pure 90s to me. Well, like
it's getting close.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, it feels like that, like, the look of the movie is very 90s. Like, it's very, like, it almost has, like, it's this post-apocalyptic feel.
Well, yeah, they didn't go for the kind of the glitz and glam that most 80s flicks were going for.
Right, like, or even, like, Dead End Drive-In. Like, that kind of that look of kind of society and what surrounds them. Even though it's, like, you know, obviously modern times and everything's cool. But it feels like, you know, a world on its own, which I really, really liked. Nice. But, yeah, I was a big fan of Hellbent.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about some Linnea Quigley.
Yay!
Oh, my God. This is like the mother load
Put more Linnea Quigley in my eye hole.
Oh my God, man. So David DeCoto.
Yeah.
Directed these three flicks. The first Blu-ray was Nightmare Sisters, and then we got the double feature of Murder Weapon and Deadly Embrace. Let's go.
Talk about all three.
We're going to talk all three. I'm just looking at what order. Let's start with Nightmare Sisters, because I think that was...
Fuck yes, we can talk about Nightmare Sisters.
That's completely different, because Murder Weapon and Deadly Embrace are very similar in tone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Nightmare Sisters. Where do we start with this one? It starts off very tame and kind of quirky comedy. Like, you're like, oh, just trying to be a weird comedy. With these, you know, are they all in college, right? They're in college.
Yeah,
right?
they're sorority sisters.
And so you got the sorority guys, and then you got the sisters, and this, you know,
boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sean.
I'm horrible at this crap. I'm looking at too much stuff right now.
So
BJ,
BJ.
Sure. All right. So, This one, if you ever want to know what kind of movie is straight up my alley, it's Nightmare Sisters. So we start off with, you know, a very typical college sort of story of, you know, the not so pretty sorority sisters that suddenly by some random act of whatever the fuck become like really, really hot. And now everybody wants a piece of it. But
they're trying so hard to make them kind of look goofy.
Linnea Quigley has these like fake teeth to make her look like she has buck teeth, and they make it so she can't sing. Brink Stevens has like these really, really long braids and these big glasses. She looks like the one girl from the Wonder Years a little bit.
Yeah.
I can't think of the character name. And then Michelle Bauer is supposed to be fat, so they put her in like this giant windbreaker, like ski coat.
And I don't know what they're putting. They got to put something under her because she's a very small girl. Well, I mean, she's not, like, super – she's got big boobies.
But they, like padded her.
They blew her up.
There's some sort of
padding.
Yeah,
they put some
stuff.
A lot of padding, yeah.
So, yeah, they just put them – like, make them, you know, ugly. And then super spooky demon fun time. Now they're super hot and the characters that we know. But what I love the most is that there's only two movies where Linnea Quigley, Michelle Bauer, and Brink Stevens are all three in it together. And this one is just – so fucking fun and so cool.
Technically, they're all in Murder Weapon.
That's why I said it's one of two.
Oh, I need you to relax.
I can't. I just get so excited. But no, it's a lot of fun. It's very much like Weird Science meets Sorority Boys meets the House Bunny. Like, it's just, it's fun. It's ridiculous. There is a bath scene that takes way too long, but at the same time...
Oh my God, it's so awkward.
But like, not really long enough, but like, what it reminded me of too is, have you ever seen that movie Delta Delta Die with Tiffany Shepis and Julie Strain?
No.
It's very similar. It's like all these sorority girls are actually like demons of Satan, but there's a bath scene with Julie Strain that is so fucking long, and now seeing this movie, I'm like, oh, well, no shit. That's where they got the inspiration from it. Because the bath scene between the three of them, they've got, like, the boys that are supposed to be their dates are on one side of the wall. And then, like, the cool guy frat guys are, like, peeking through the window trying to see it. It's just so ridiculous. And at the same time, just, God, so perfect. And everyone dies by fellatio and just, it's everything. It is everything that I love. It's trashy and campy and sexy and it's the best.
Things get started off with a crystal ball and a guy doing a really bad Indian impersonation, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That's where it all stems from. I mean, he's able to pull, and then, you know, the crystal ball somehow gets floated to, you know, because obviously Brink Stevens buys it from a yard sale, brings it into play. They mess around with it during when the boys are there. They unrelease this what do they go like, just, you know, succubus.
They're all succubi.
Yeah, so then multiples. I'm okay with them being multiples.
Well, all three of them are succubus, so that make them succubi.
Oh, okay. Succubi, thank you. But yeah, no, I'm with BJ on this. Like, the bath scene is total boner, and then it turns into an awkward boner, and then you just get really tired, and it's like, oh man, like this is hurting, and then it just, you know, it ends. But no, I'm with BJ because there's something about this, like this movie, stuff like this. This is the reason why I'm a big fan of Ghoulies 3. Because it has that campy, sexy, weird mentality. And I'm something with the 90s and like even like kind of late 80s. Something drags me to those movies. I don't know, because it reminds me, because this is one of those movies that I rented and watched in my room alone when I was like 14 years old or 13 years old and just fucking loved it. And I would rent all those fucking bikini clad films and fucking bikini summer, bikini car wash company, all those movies. And those all fall right into place of like, they almost could be porn, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously there is this, I mean, some of these, obviously these guys have directed porn. Some of them gay porno. But anyways, David Acuto is funny because being his like background and even what he's done in the future, like this guy has done so much shit. Yeah. Like he's done porn. He's done campy horror films. He's done family movies. And he has that like 1313 like series that he does. Like, I've never watched any of those movies. I don't know if you have, BJ. That might be more up your alley.
You ever watch any?
Yeah, his 1313 movies. Or maybe his Brotherhood series of the vampires. I've only seen the first one.
Uh-uh.
Well, the dude's always working, man. He's
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, these 1313 movies
Wait,
are very...
Wait, oh, nope, I've definitely seen the Brotherhood. I had to look at the cover art.
Yeah, yep. The Brotherhood was very, like, it was in stores, like, at Blockbuster, there was a lot of copies. And then, like, the sequel started coming out, and I was like, oh, man, the Brotherhood 2. And I was like, wait a second. Oh, shit. These are super homoerotic. Oh, they're turning into softcore gay porno movies. Like, this is, what is happening? Like, and that's what he does. 1313 movies are like that as well. I've never watched any of those, but you'll see them pop up like on Netflix and stuff like that every once in a while.
If you ever get the chance, you need to check out his Beastly Boys with a Z. The tagline is Drop Dead Dangerous.
Mm.
It is. It's real gay and real good.
So.
You can usually tell his movies too just by looking at the cover art. If it's like some off-brand looking pretty white people in all of their heads with something weird behind them, it's a David Cato film and you're in for a ride.
Nice. Very nice. Well, Nightmare Sisters, fantastic. Probably my favorite of the three released here. But
I don't know, man.
There's a lot of fun to be had with Murder Weapon.
Murder Weapon's fun, but it is so
takes an hour.
Fucking out of control.
Right. Yeah.
It takes about an hour. Like once that hour hits.
Once the gore starts happening, I was like, holy shit.
Because you're watching it, you're like, oh, what the fuck am I watching? Like a bunch of people just talking shit. And then all of a sudden, like an hour into the film, you're like, this is a fucking slasher movie? Like, yeah, what the fuck is happening?
I actually took notes on Murder Weapon. About 45 minutes in, I timed it. Like, all of a sudden, there's, like, this head smash. This epic.
The head smash is fucking epic, smash. Dude.
Holy
shit. It's fucking
shit.
Brutal as shit.
I mean, here's my note. My note says, 45 minute in, shit gets real. But that it's slow going because the first 10 minutes, it's like some weird dream sequence. It's like
there's no dialogue.
Yeah.
For the first there's no dialogue for the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie. There's no talking. And then it goes into, you know, Linnea Quigley being like interviewed. Like, and then it's just like it's so out of place.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to decipher, like, what's actually happening, and then it jumps to her, like, with her friend, like, by the pool, and then she starts having, like, little flashbacks, and then you realize that they're just inviting a bunch of guys over.
Yeah, I mean...
And they're partying, and then death starts happening. You're like, what the fuck?
Well, the plot basically is these two girls, at some point in their relationship, in their lives, were in some sort of mental asylum.
Right.
They've since then got out of the mental asylum, and I don't know if they've, like, just got out or what, but they are bored, and they're by the pool, and they want to invite a bunch of boys over. And once that happens, yeah, then, you know, shit starts getting real.
Getting real a bit.
And Linnea Quigley is wonderful, as we know. But can we please talk about Karen Russell? Goddamn. Mm. Huh. She is lovely.
Smoking.
That's all. And this is
Ricky from Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2.
Yep, he's sure in that too.
He has the shortest shorts on when he has a t-shirt. You don't even know he's wearing shorts. You just think he's fucking naked. Like, I've never seen shorts on a guy so short before.
Not even in...
And I've watched a lot of 80s movies. Like, these are short, short shorts.
Not even in Sleepaway Camp? I mean, Sleepaway Camp has some friggin' short shorts.
Yeah, but they're also, like, children.
No, the camp counselors.
Oh, the big buff dude has really short shorts. Yeah, that's right. But I don't know. I think it's because he has that, you know, button down that's loose.
Yeah.
And it's not tucked in, so it just looks like a big night-night shirt. Like, you know, just walking around. And, like, when they first go up to the house, he's like, oh, like, everybody's fucked her. Like, and they're talking about it, basically. Like, oh, dude, she's so easy. And it's like, who's going to go for it? This is like a sausage fest. And he, like, walks through the door. And I was like, wait a second. Did he have pants on? Like, I didn't see any pants. But Ricky, like, he's always Ricky. Ricky is not a very good actor. Even in this, he's just fucking goofy.
Bless
you. What was
oh, God.
That?
Dorbs sneezing going on.
And when that's I sneeze, I have like cutest, this weird high-pitched like bullshit that happens.
I've ever heard. And this
it's
is
not. I sound like a squeak toy, and it's I can't be tough at all when I have that sneeze. Like, I could have as much black lipstick and leather on as I want, and that sneeze comes out, and it's like, and there it goes. Anyway, murder weapon.
Murder weapon.
So, murder weapon, once the kills start happening, and after they watch Nightmare Sisters and make a joke about who makes this shit, you know, there's it gets really fucking bloody. Like, the kill scenes in the film are really, really great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And some of the best I've seen.
And, like, yeah, I know, I agree. Like, I was watching it and just kind of, like, I remember watching this years ago. This is another one of those, like, all these movies I watched when I was younger because I would rent as many, like, things that looked like they had ladies that would be naked in them. I rented them. And I'm sure at that time I was like, man, this movie's really boring. But, man, I don't remember that fucking gore.
Dude, the shotgun to the face.
Yeah, dude, there's some tough shit in that movie.
There is.
But once everything starts going, like, crazy, like, I was laughing so hard whenever they – basically they decide it's Ricky and, like, you know, the other – I'm still going to call him Ricky. He's like with the guy and they're like, oh my God, what's going on? He's like, oh, I think there's people outside. And it's like they start talking about how they're going to escape. But each time they talk about it, they're like, wait, what if this is happening? And they're like, oh, wait, we can't do that. And it's like they're in the kitchen and he's – I forget what he says. It's like – he's like, oh, man. And they, like, get in the car and he's like, wait, what if the car's, like, wired to blow up? You're right. Let's go to another car. Like, what the fuck is going through your head, dudes? Like, they just bounce around. Like, they don't actually – they can just literally walk out the fucking door, but they think there's going to be fucking booby traps outside and there's going to be, like, a million of these psychos – that they just don't ever attempt it. I just think it's hysterical. Like each time they try to make a plan, they back away from it because yeah. this possibly could happen. And it's just like so fucking goofy. And Ricky fucking gets it.
Yeah.
Funny. Ricky gets it.
There is a scene where one of the characters near the end is walking into the house and it's supposed to be nobody there. And there's a crew man like drinking a Diet Coke. Just kind of standing
there.
No,
but you know what? He's coming down the stairs and he's turning a corner and that's when he finds his friend shot.
Uh-huh.
Or the guy that he fucking hates basically and they become besties. But yeah, I want to say, you could say Diet Coke, but in my mind,
it's probably a beer.
That's the thing. And, but I want to go on a side tangent of that one sequence. There's a guy. All right. Obviously a crew member standing next to a light. And he's just casually standing there with what looks to me like a beer. But, okay, goof in the movie. However, that right there tells me that that set was fucking relaxed. They were having a fucking party. And they just didn't give two shits and they were just making a movie with friends. Like, I know that's a goof in the movie, but right there tells me that movie was probably so much goddamn fun to make with them. Like, I wanted to be there. Because if you have a fucking crew guy just sitting there, like, leaning up against the door drinking a beer.
No, dude, it's a Diet Coke. I got a picture right here. It's a Diet Coke. You're
ruining my dreams.
But yeah, he's standing right by a light.
But still, I mean, just hanging out, drinking a Coke on set, Diet Coke, sorry, Sean. If it was in the future, hey, be a Coke.
People are going to fact check us, and then they're going to friggin', we're going to get emails and shit.
Yeah, you dumbasses. But still, it just looks like a really chill environment. Goddamn, I wish that was a beer.
I know, huh? Yeah.
People would have believed it, too. They wouldn't have fact checked us.
BG, do you have anything more to say about Murder Weapon before we move on to Deadly Embrace?
Nah, I'm all about Deadly Embrace. I mean, Nightmare Sisters is my favorite of the three, so move on.
Deadly Embrace is kind of more of a drama territory rather than horror. A little bit of psychological thriller about a young, little young man who goes to, I guess, work. For this woman. And,
he becomes kind of like a caretaker around the house because the husband's really busy. Is that what you call him? Caretaker?
He also keeps, this guy's wife's vagina warm.
Whoa.
He's not there.
That's a way to put that.
I was going to say he keeps it wet.
Right,
he keeps it moist.
I was trying to get too gross.
But yeah,
somebody might be listening to this on their lunch break. You don't want to gross them out.
Ah, we can gross them out. So Jan Michael Vincent is some fucking douchebag who's cheating on his wife with some Marilyn Monroe wannabe and leaving his very beautiful wife. That's Mindy Miller, right? I think it is Mindy Miller. Mindy Miller at home alone and hires a kind of a pool boy. Go get groceries, keep the vagina moist, you know, dude. And
if you say moist one more time, I'm out.
And then we have Linnea Quigley, who is sitting in a chair for the first hour of the film. She's always in the fucking chair answering the phone.
At least she has some wardrobe changes.
Well, here's the thing is that she is obviously a hardcore actress because she will not leave that phone because she's waiting for a big break.
Exactly.
You know, but that chair is like three times as big as she is.
How do we survive for a cell phone?
And I like when she got up and then she's like in the movie and I'm like, holy shit, she left the chair. It like fucking takes an hour. So basically he's there keeping the vagina warm and, you know, some shit goes sour. He decides, hey, Mindy Miller, I'm not really into your cold vagina. I want Linnea Quigley's vagina.
Mm.
But what's up with the fucking sex demon and Michelle Bauer?
Yeah, I was just about to bring up the female spirit of sex.
When you have, you know, Linnea Quigley plays, you know, when she has those kind of, you know, strobe light disco sex looks, it's Linnea Quigley. But instead of Mindy Miller being there, it's Michelle Bauer.
Yeah.
And, they
and you're complaining?
Oh, no, I'm not.
That's just an odd choice.
I mean, we get to see Mindy Miller naked, and we get to see Michelle Bauer. But I actually fast-forward the commentary to see why they chose Michelle Bauer and not Mindy Miller. And then that blonde-haired dude guy shows up and makes out with her, who's not in the movie at all other than that scene. But he's like, yeah, David's like, yeah, she was like in the area, so he called her, and I just made up some spirit of sex character, had her take off her clothes for a day, and called it that. It's like, so it doesn't serve any fragmented purpose to the film at all. It's just Michelle
complaining,
which I am completely content with. I'm surprised they didn't use Mindy Miller. And this is the worst hidden camera ever in any movie. Because apparently no one notices the big plate glass window that's in the corner of the room with a giant camera sticking out of it or behind it.
No one
even
notices.
Is that a two-way mirror? Because we never get to see it. But good Lord, what a terribly hidden camera. Jesus. But yeah, it turns out to be like, it almost turns out to be like an A&E movie for a second.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I kind of felt like I was watching, because every once in a while I'd watch those with my mother, like, growing up. She was like, let's watch a movie. And I'm like, get suckered into it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And they're watching it. And I was like, why is this so fucking dramatic? Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, there's some kind of, like, somebody wants to kill their husband for money. And then I was like, oh, shit, it's one of these A&E Lifetime for Women movies. Like, where it's not even really a movie at all. It's just, you know, some reenactment of, like, someone trying to kill their husband or kill their wife. And that's exactly what this movie is, except with a lot of boobies. So, if I didn't talk to you, and if I didn't talk you into buying this movie right there, I don't know what else to do.
I have a question for both of you. Do you think that it's in Linnea Quigley's contract that in at least one scene, she has to have her hair in that thing where it's like a half fountain on top of her head and the rest of it's down? Because
you know,
she has that hair in like every movie she's ever done.
Maybe that's just her hairstyle that she really likes.
It could be her signature thing. I think every actor, you know, they try to get the thing that, you know, everyone wants to see in a movie, you know? It's her I'll be back, right? Moment is her hair.
Okay.
Now we talked about these movies in general about, you know, we didn't talk about how they mostly all look, which they obviously look all great. But however, Deadly Embrace, like, I don't know if you guys had this, but there was an audio issue. And I actually apparently they used the VHS audio for it because I guess the master tapes were, you know, ruined or something.
Yeah, I
but
noticed that.
But the only
in,
problem was the fucking you couldn't hear anything because the music was so goddamn loud.
Murder Weapon had a couple scenes like that as well.
Yeah, and it's just like there's this weird like flashing effect too. Not like it's an effect, but like, you know, because you could see the grain and stuff of the print. But it gets bright and then dark and then bright and dark through, you know, for a good portion of Deadly Embrace. But the audio issue was, I mean, I'm glad that they put this together. But since I always like jizz all over Vinegar Syndrome and give them so many props, you know, this is the one thing I have noticed. The audio was kind of goofy. So there, I'm not the biggest fanboy on the planet.
You son of a bitch.
But no, I mean it's still a great package. But it's only during the music scenes, like whenever the music's playing in Murder Weapon and Deadly Embrace, not so much, but a lot during Murder Weapon.
Murder Weapon.
It's Murder Weapon. Well, okay, I got him confused. Murder Weapon's the slasher. Deadly Embrace is the Lifetime for Women movie. Murder Weapon's the one with the audio issue.
Yeah, because my note says like dialogue seems soft at some points. Like it kind of just
I had to turn that shit up, man, because the music was so goddamn loud. Not that it serves any purpose to the movie, probably. No. The music.
It's like, it feels like really dialogue that was integral to the plot. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to know is that some shit's going down, and like, what the fuck is the killer wearing? Like a helmet with a fucking burlap sack?
Way back on Murder Weapon?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Who cares?
It looks like she, like, the person has a helmet on with the burlap sack wrapped around, like, fucking black electrical tape or some shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they were trying to make something creepy, like, spur of the moment, but I have no idea what the fuck they're wearing. Other than it looks like a biker outfit for the rest of it.
He just watched, like, Nailgun Massacre and,
doubt it,
like, Friday the 13th Part 2.
No, oh, wow, that's a really good...
And comboed them up.
Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome. All right, BJ, anything else to say about Deadly Embrace before we move along?
Nope. Nightmare Sisters for life. All right. Move on.
That's my favorite one. Having these three on Blu-ray, though, God bless Vinegar Syndrome, for sure.
Seriously.
Let's talk about Hobgoblins really quick.
Why really quick?
Because...
Dude, Hobgoblins is fucking, like, I'm getting so tired of people's shit.
I was excited to watch Hobgoblins, and this thing's,
Did you not like it?
Dude, Hobgoblins, okay. Like, here's the thing.
Hobgoblins is the best.
It's...
Are you kidding me? Did you want it to be more like Gremlins?
And no, less, I don't,
like,
know what I wanted it to be.
I always wanted to be
this is
what
I need to let simmer and probably revisit, and I'll probably like it. But
I think
it's so fun.
Watching Hobgoblins for the first time, you're not going to like it. But if you watch this movie when you were younger, but even so, man, like, even a, like, I know that, you know, Rob Hunter hated this movie a lot, but, like, there's going to be people that hate it. But seriously, what is not?
Hate it. I mean,
what
it's not, for what?
No. What is not to like about this movie? Go, Sean.
Well, they're just freaking stuffed animals. Like, they didn't even try to make these things, like, move as puppets.
Because the hobgoblins aren't, like, they're just a vehicle for what the movie is really about. And that's being true to your inner self and not holding back to your deepest, darkest desires, whatever they may be.
God damn, BJ.
Do you know what happens if you don't get laid? You call sex hotlines of people who are disinterested in you, and then you crash your fucking car. So maybe
1-800-976 SCAG.
You just made me think. You just made me, like, read into Hobgoblins way more than I thought I ever would.
Personally, yeah, I think that's all full of shit.
Oh, it totally is full of shit.
Just a bunch of Muppets fucking running around making people believe sexy thoughts.
The army guy, though, and his girlfriend, I don't know anyone's names, and I'm too tired to look it up. but, like, the army boyfriend and, like, his, like, skanky girlfriend are the fucking best. Like, I know I'm supposed to hate them, and I can't, because the shit that comes out of their mouth, I just, like, think about it. I'm like, how did this script get approved? And then they have that fight scene where clearly they can't move past a certain line because that's where all the cameras are set up. So they just keep fighting in, like,
The fight scene. This is almost like the bath scene in fucking Nightmare Sisters.
It keeps going. It doesn't end. But the best is when, like, you see where the natural progression should be and they can't go any farther because it's like, oh, there's a boom there. I can't go that far. Oh, it's so good.
Well, the funny thing is, it seems so like they didn't even worry about the height of the hobgoblins. Like, all of a sudden, one is, like, as tall, like, as, you know, one of the actresses or whatever.
Are you seriously fucking picking on the continuity of
hobgoblins?
Yes. Hey, guess what?
No, it's not. It's just a fucking, it's a goofy fucking monster movie.
What's hilarious is, so these security guards, this old security guard and his young security guards, he keeps, I guess, going through. Like, he keeps having to hire new guys. It's like they keep these things in this vault, but it's like they don't really keep it locked or...
No, the
That's
hobgoblins
why they have security guards.
The hobgoblins make you open the vault. They draw you nearer that.
Goddamn it's hobgoblins.
Still, yeah, deepest
goddamn
desires.
Mental.
Then guess who shows up? Fucking the dude that was banging Linnea Quigley and fucking Mindy Miller shows up as one of the thugs.
Oh, shit.
So that's what ruined his life was Linnea Quigley and Mindy Miller. He ended up trying to steal hobgoblins and get shot, Sean. Do you know how deep this movie is?
Holy, I need to rewatch this again.
Like, do you know else this movie has?
You can trace everything back to Hobgoblins. Every movie ever existed.
This movie also has has a wonderful tale of sexual liberation of a young woman feeling stifled by society and everyone around her, and then she finally embraces her inner sex appeal and goes for it, and she's fully satisfied. That's amazing.
Have you written an article on Hobgoblins?
No.
I think you should. This is good stuff.
I know. I've been so busy. I haven't been able to write anything, and I'm so angry about the election, so I can't not find, like, a smash the patriarchy, fuck everyone.
That's really why we didn't do a show for 2 weeks, because, like, we were just, like, couldn't muster up any sort of, like, you know, positive energy.
Hobgoblins 3 times.
All right, well, I mean...
Hobgoblins is awesome.
Do you want to talk about about how the puppeteer felt while moving the
puppeteer? The puppeteer was friggin' spiking his Diet Cokes.
And wait, is that the guy that was in? Oh my god, this traces back to Murder Weapon. The guy holding the Diet Coke and Murder Weapon was the puppeteer for the Hobgoblins. Well,
he's just like shaking the Hobgoblins at people. But, you know,
that's fucking scary, dude.
I do find it hilarious when someone's obviously fighting a puppet and they have to, like, the puppet actually falls away and they grab it and pull it back on top of them and continue rolling around on the ground.
My favorite's when they're holding the puppet and, like, it's like no one else's hand is in it. So it's basically somebody just shaking a stuffed animal like it's the toughest thing. I love that shit. It's so funny.
Did we explain the plot of Hobgoblins?
You don't need to.
Hobgoblin things get out and somehow they can make your innermost desires come real in your mind. And that's how they get to you.
And in your pants.
It could result in your death.
No, and spoiler alert, everyone's inner desires have to do with you wanting to put stuff inside of you or be inside of something.
That's a lie.
So how about the fact that
it's
Hobgoblins was made obviously because everybody wanted to do a Gremlins type movie.
Yeah.
And so we had Ghoulies, you know, fucking Charles Band made a million fucking Gremlins ripoffs. And then, you know, we had like Mac and Me and fucking Nookie and shit like that because everybody wanted Gizmo. So then we had like these cute alien things for, you know, a short while because of the success off of E.T. and obviously Gizmo. But I love in Hobgoblins, they're like, you know what? Let's make them really love light. Like, I just started laughing. I was like, oh my god. Like, I completely forgot about that aspect of fucking Hobgoblins. Is that, you know, they just reverse the... What are the other rules? Because it feels like they have 3 rules and they're just the opposites of fucking what Gremlins is. But,
I don't know.
I dig it, man. I it's funny. It's so fucking stupid. It's over the top. I mean, it's literally, like, I don't... To clarify what Sean means, is it's literally a puppet on a person's hand.
Or a stick.
And the eyes are not blinking. No, because you can, when the Hobgoblin, like, one of the worst sequences is when it rushes across the bar. You can see the guy behind the bar putting his hand just flat on the bar and rushing the Hobgoblin up the bar, knocking everything down. Like, he's not even trying to make it animated.
Here's where
he's
just
knocking stuff down with his hands. But that's literally, it's just people with their hands up the Hobgoblin's ass. The Hobgoblins don't blink. Their mouths barely move. But they just, and they look like the fucking, the weird rat ghoulie off of fucking Ghoulies.
I love that they have, like, teddy bear hair, though. like the fluffy stuffed animal that you like get for children. So when they have the scene where they're driving, like it like wafts in the wind, wafts in the wind. I don't know what the word I'm thinking of is. I'm waves, so tired. Wafts, waves.
We're going all over the place with this, but before we stop talking about Hobgoblins, we do need to mention the club that I would love to spend some time. You briefly
club
mentioned
scum.
Club Scum, motherfuckers.
Oh, I want to go so bad.
Club Scum for life.
It's clearly like a high school cafeteria. Which is also like in when he's having that like I'm a rock star singer fantasy.
Yeah.
It's the same fucking set. It's a high school cafeteria.
The name Club Scum. Has anybody created a real life Club Scum?
I doubt it.
God damn. You're missing out.
Not a lot of people.
That's a wasted opportunity.
But, you know, with its goofy shit and its, you know, pretty much one of the, you know, I mean, Mystery Science Theater fucking, you know, parodied, or not parodied, they used this film for one of their episodes.
I actually wouldn't mind.
But they love, like, the thing is, it's always been known as that, and it's embraced as kind of a really, you know, funky, goofy movie, and it's been nothing more than that. It's, they don't try to play it off of this as a cult favorite or anything like that. It's just people like to have it because it is so goofy, and you do have likable characters. The Hobgoblins are hysterical, mainly because of just how they are portrayed and moved, and, you know, how they're quote unquote animated. But it's just a fun all around movie. Like that's how I look at this. I don't look at anything more.
Well, this is one like where I appreciate all the.
But
extras.
I don't understand why people say it's shit.
No. I am not saying that at all. And I think my expectations maybe were too high. You know, I had Troll 2 level expectations. This was nowhere near as good as Troll 2.
As in entertaining. This is way more fun.
But I really want to check out all the special features on here because they got the Hobgoblins Revisited. There's like a making of featurette, a new one. But they also have like a featurette called Hobgoblins, the Making of a Disaster Piece, which I think the director Rick Sloan was a part of putting that together.
I really want to see the sequel real bad.
And then they do have a
fucking sequel that's not made that long ago.
No.
It's like, I think Shout Factory put it out.
Huh. What? And then I do want to hear the commentary from Rick Sloan. So, you know, I'm gonna be revisiting all that stuff on this for sure. And, but you know, I'm gonna be honest, I was a little let down. But I'm not gonna let.
Wow.
I'm not saying it's shit. I would never say that it's an awful, horrible movie. It's just for me, what I was my expectations, you know, were.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But Club Scum almost saved the day.
Well, I think it's awesome, and you're crazy.
All right, one more here to talk about before we jump into the back room. This one I dug a hell of a lot. Death Row Game Show.
Oh, I love it so much.
Holy moly. Chuck Todin is our main character. He hosts this controversial game show called Death Row Game Show, where basically they take death row inmates and make them compete for their lives. And the entertaining part of the show is when they do not make it. They're put into no-win scenarios where they're pretty much going to get fried. But he accidentally, I think, kills a mob boss, gets involved with the mob, and it's just entertaining as hell. That's all I gotta say. What do you guys have to contribute to the plot before we dive into this?
Maybe reconstruct what you said.
Shut up.
I'll let you guys mostly talk about this because I've never been a fan of this movie. So you guys can have at it. Yeah, I've never been a fan of it. There are moments that I do like. It's just a little.
It's cornball for sure.
Yeah, I don't really care for these types of movies. And the only movie that I allow, like, I guess this type of comedy is fucking, like, and I don't even really compare them, but, like, Return of the Killer Tomatoes and Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, like, I like that stuff. But I'm not a fan of, like, Airplane and Naked Gun, and that's what these films feel like. To me, is that there's a lot going around in the background and just like little hidden things.
Like a dude
and just,
like fucking a turkey.
Oh yeah, God, like so good.
Yeah, like I'm just not into it. I mean, I had the DVD of this from Code Red. It's when I initially saw it. I really didn't like it. I did watch the Blu-ray just to see kind of the transfer and stuff, and I think I ended up actually watching the entire movie because I turned it off. I think with the DVD. But because I knew we were doing a show, I watched the whole thing. I'm not a fan of this movie whatsoever. So you guys can talk about it.
Wow. You're a fan of Hobgoblins, not a fan of Death Row Game Show.
I'm a fan of both. Nope. I had a blast with it. This is one that I actually did watch the special features on because, I watched it with Zach, and he wanted to check them out because he's the special features guy. But they had like a making of documentary, and this movie was part of kind of like a series of like a collective. Like these same guys have been working together making these low budget films. Like one of them was something like Night of the Queer Wolf, which I need to find immediately. But it's kind of like the same crew. So, you know, this movie has a lot of in-jokes. It has a lot of things that, unless you've seen all of their filmography, you're not going to understand, like, why it's funny. So some of the things were lost on me in that regard. Like, I could tell, like, you're referencing something, but I don't know what you're referencing. So it reminded me a lot of the style of filmmaking that Chris Siever makes, like, a lot of his films, where it'll be a completely different story, but, like, a character from an old movie will randomly be in it. And it seems like that's what Death Row Game Show did, which is why it's so off the wall. But I think the reason I liked it so much is that it feels very ahead of its time and its concept.
Yeah.
In the sense that all I wanted was for it to be remade by Charlie Brooker from Black Mirror, because he has an episode in season one called White Bear that is very, very in the same realm of like profiting off of people who are just going to rot in jail anyway. And the whole time I'm like, oh my God, this, like, if there is any movie that should be remade, because I don't like the idea of remaking stuff that's already good, like remake shit that could be improved upon. Death Row Game Show is definitely one of them. I think that like a sweet, gritty reboot of this would be really awesome. All of the effects in this movie are made for probably 12 cents. There's like a gas chamber that's clearly made out of cardboard and like a pool noodle, and it looks like an easy bake oven. But for whatever reason, this movie just works for me because everybody's fully aware of how fucking ridiculous this is. They're not trying to present something, you know, weird and try to say like, oh, this is like serious comedy horror. They're like, no, this is a fucking cheeseball movie. I can't believe people gave us money to do this. We're going to have fun. And everybody looks like they're having fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really liked it. There's like a really fucking weird dream sequence that's very like, I don't know how else to describe it. Like it reminds me of like the same color palette of Dr. Caligari, but it doesn't quite go that far at all. But it has that weird, like bright pastel with just extreme close up and weird bullshit for no reason. And I get that it's a dream sequence, but it's so out of nowhere. I really like the lead actor. I think he's a total fucking ham.
Oh,
and
he's
just
great.
He just chews the scenery in this movie, and it's really funny. I don't know. I liked it. I really liked it, but I do think that this is a perfect candidate for something to be remade for a newer audience.
I wrote like in my notes, remake this with Tom Cruise and watch the money pour in.
I think that it has really good ideas going for it, but I don't think that they had the right resources. I mean,
I almost feel like they're like, oh, something like this would never happen. We'd never live in a world with, you know, that would even consider a Death Row Game Show.
Well, know? is this after Running Man, right?
It's around the same time, I guess.
Yeah,
that's what it feels. It just feels like a ripoff of Running Man, but just comedic aspect.
I think it came first because the guy was talking about, I don't know if it was the director, or the producer, somebody in this documentary that they did on it, was saying that in every single review of, or no, they did come out around the same time, sorry. Yeah. In every single review of Death Row Game Show, they mentioned Running Man. But they don't think that any review of Running Man had Death Row Game Show referenced in it. And I thought that was like really interesting to say, to kind of say.
Yeah. But and, I feel like the Running Man was like somebody being caught in that kind of scenario, you know, but this was like, I don't know. Like I felt like there was like social commentary that if this was released today, like there social commentary. Yeah, but this one was a little, I don't know, I felt this
I mean,
one,
yeah, they're being hunted, that's the only, like, big difference.
Right, this was like, these are guys, they're gonna die anyway, so, you know, might as well make a game out of it.
Which is why I think that it's closer to Black Mirror's White Bear than it is to Running Man. Huh. And this, it's very similar to like when people try to say Battle Royale and The Hunger Games are the same thing. It's like, no, on principle, yeah, there's a lot of similarities, but like the intentions are totally different. Whereas Death Row Game Show to Running Man, like, yeah, principle on paper, they sound the same, but like the intention behind it is totally different. But it's really close to the White Bear episode, like unsettlingly close.
Yeah. This does have probably one of my favorite villains in that that mob boss with the spaghetti on his shirt.
Oh my God.
He's
gross.
He's real gross.
Who is that guy? I'm trying to find who it was. Like, what was the character's
hero,
name?
Apparently.
Yeah, Running Man and Death Row Game Show came out the same year. So
yeah, 87.
Yeah, impossible for them to have, like, especially in that day and age, to have, like, ripped off each other.
yeah, this villain, this mob boss who his mom accidentally gets roped into the show, and he's basically was telling the, our game show host, played by John McCafferty, you know, nothing bad better happen to anyone in my group, you know, ever again. It's better never happen again. And of course, his mom somehow gets who's trying to go to another game show, gets roped in, and they think that she's a contestant, which I guess Death Row inmates are able to wander around the studio, I guess.
It was the 80s, man.
But she's wearing stripes, so therefore, oh, she must be on Death Row. And hijinks ensue.
What was funny, too, is that the actor playing the mom, the mama, the grandma, is the same actor who plays the mob boss that gets fried.
Yeah,
put a wig on him and was like that's not here's a woman. Some lipstick, hunch yourself over, and they've like modified his voice a little bit.
Yeah,
and something. He sounds like he's talking into a fan, like when kids do that to sound like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I don't know. That movie's fucking batshit, but it really, really does. It's fun, but it really, really would benefit from a remake.
It's bananas. There's this underlying, like, possible subtext that is actually compelling, in my opinion. And but I feel like they didn't really know what to do with it, and they made it more comedic. But yeah, I would love to see a remake of this. And by the way, Black Mirror, I just started watching it. I've only two episodes in. Holy shit.
Where you been?
I don't know. I just haven't watched. I didn't realize it was like an anthology type series.
I've never seen it.
Holy moly, Brad, you need to watch it. It's series is a different episode or a different story, but doesn't it all revolve around like technology and sociology and
it's like Twilight Zone, and like some of the episodes you're like, oh, well, that's way far off in the future, if that's ever even possible. And then some episodes, like there's one in season four, episode three, is happening right now.
That's what, like, I hear. Like, I need to.
Like, the news came out the other day, and I was like, holy fuck. Like, this is terrifying.
Even the first episode of season one of Black Mirror, where the prime minister is basically threatened he needs to fuck a pig on camera. Or
they'll
else.
Kill the princess.
Yeah, he's going to kill the princess. And the way they deal with technology and Twitter and Facebook and social media and the news is, it's like, and it's uncanny. It's like, oh my God, what a good show. Anyway, moving along. Well, that's all the kind of the horror genre releases from Vinegar Syndrome from September and October. Let's dive into the back room.
Moany sounds.
Oh my God. So the big one they released on Blu-ray that I want to talk about first would be China Silk.
Did you actually watch it?
I did not. I do not I do not receive the porno titles for review.
Oh man, I was really excited for a second thinking that you actually finally watched one of the porns.
It's to be honest, really, it caused some uncomfortableness with, you know, family stuff here in the house, and kind of, you know, so it's just kind of like, for me,
Because they're not family movies. You don't watch them with the family, not, Sean.
There's just, you know, some things in my house. You
Sean
know.
Tried to put on China Silk for the family when they were over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No but wonder it, Noah's always crying whenever we hear him. God.
It just makes it easier to avoid that. I'm not, you know, I don't seek those out anyway. But you know, I got, that's why I got you guys. You guys are, you know, these will be discussed.
The porn hustlers?
Huh?
The porn hustlers.
Yeah. China and Silk peddlers. Was actually something that I was curious about. So tell me about it, you guys. Get me all hot and bothered.
Well, you can let BJ do it. I wasn't a huge fan of this one either. because this was more or less kind of a...
Same director as Trashy Lady, right?
Steve Scott, yeah. With my porn, I like a little bit more of a story. I mean, there is somewhat of a story going on in this, but it's more or less kind of just a straight up porno. And that's something that kind of, I don't know, it doesn't really...
Yeah, it's trying to marry the world between adult film and... like a drug crime movie, which was pretty popular in the late 70s, early 80s. So they're trying to like bridge the gap by saying like, do you know what dudes like? Porn. Do you know what else dudes like? Drug and crime movies. Let's put them together. But the drug and crime movie, like the porno aspect of the movie, pretty great. The drug and crime storyline, it just feels like they had an idea of like what would be in a how to do a crime movie for dummies tutorial and then wrote a script around that. So it's really,
yeah,
it's really not that great as far as like the actual movie, but the porn content is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean it is a porno, and there's not a lot of music that's playing behind it. There's you know, because a lot of those films, they take out any moaning or anything like that. But you know, there's a lot of moaning and not a lot of soundtrack behind the sex scenes. But you know, I didn't know Peter North was in it. Peter North shows up. He's not really credited in the beginning, but he's in the film. I thought that was kind of interesting.
I mean, it looks nice too, which is something that, you know, you want with your pornographic restorations. but no, it does really, really look nice. But as far as the...
It's got a hilarious open scene with, you know, Harry Reams. When it's just like, obviously he's shooting it in the backyard of probably the director's house, and he just like falls down and acts like he gets shot. I laughed. But yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I thought the whole, not espionage. I mean, what would you call it? Just kind of like, trickery? Like, I don't even know what you really.
It's like, this is what we think should happen in this movie, but we're not entirely sure. You're just sneaking around.
Yeah, they just, it's a lot of sneakiness, and then, you know, I mean, obviously you know what's happening, and, you know, it all comes to at the end with, you know, kind of the so-called twist, and that's it. I mean, it's definitely more or less, you know, a cheap porno. They don't really try to do anything other than that. You know, because I like stuff like even though Trashy Lady is very much like a porno, at least like the setting, and they are trying to make, you know, some noir like fucking, you know, 50s, 60s movie, which I can appreciate, you know, kind of from that like aesthetic. I enjoy that. Or something like, you know, Prisoner of Paradise, the Bob Chin, you know, war, you know, Nazi war movie. You know, they're trying to make something that's intriguing and kind of hold your attention. This is more or less just a porno. So
yeah,
definitely not my bag on this one.
Sorry to burst your bubble there, man. Sean.
Well, let's move on to this double feature, Eat at the Blue Fox and Titillation. Now, Eat at the Blue Fox is a Ron Jeremy. Ron Jeremy's in it.
Yep, he is.
What's Eat at the Blue Fox about?
I didn't watch that one.
Yeah,
because of that reason.
Yeah, I didn't get around to Eat at the Blue Fox or Titillation.
Wow.
Neither did I. I missed them.
But, I mean...
There's only so much porn I can watch in, like, 3 days.
Now, did you avoid it for sure, like you saw that Ron Jeremy was in it, and you were kind of like, ugh.
I mean, I'll watch Titillation. I will eventually watch Eat at the Blue Fox, but he as a person is so repulsive to me. Like, not even, like, I don't give a shit about how big his dick is or porn or any of, like, none of that is what makes him gross to me. Just him as a person, like, I just look at him and I feel like I can smell him and it's not a good thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you ever meet those people where you're like, I bet you smell like a turkey sandwich. And I think, like, that's how I feel when I look at Ron Jeremy.
I would say, like, old Swiss cheese and possibly, like...
He smells, you know, like
ham
what I
that's
bet,
been
like,
left out.
He probably smells like what I think the floor of a bodega, like, would taste like. Just fucked up, man. I don't know I know why he had a career, but...
He was the everyman, only with a big dick.
That's kind of how, like, how all these guys were, though. I mean, anybody from the 70s and 80s, they were the everyman. Like, we didn't have, like, they didn't try to get, like, you know, quote-unquote good-looking guys for anything. They just got what they could.
Yeah, they didn't matter. They just needed bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, oh, God, like, have some standards, man. He's so gross. Ugh. I want to meet somebody out there. Like, if you are sincerely and genuinely, like, really fucking turned on by Ron Jeremy, hit me up on Twitter because I need to pick your brain and figure out who hurt you in life. Ugh, he's so
I don't think it's anybody. I think it's that, you know, it's equivalent to who's the Drop and Loads guy?
Oh. Oh, shit.
Nick Manning.
Nick Manning, yeah. Fucking loads.
Dropping loads all over this room. Like, I love how they parody that in the Hot Tub Time Machine. You can hear him say that in the other room. I'm dropping hot loads all over this room. Well, fucking, if anybody doesn't watch as much porn as BJ and I do, there's a porn actor who's like a greased up dirtball.
He's so nasty.
His name's Nick Manning. He's like, you know, muscular, like, you know, thick, like, black hair, always gelled back, always oiled up, and every porno, as
his
soon as
dirty
he
talk
ejaculates,
is so good.
Yeah, I'm fucking you. I'm fucking you hard.
Oh, I'm gonna fucking come on your glasses, you fucking nerd.
But whenever he comes to, he always says it never fails. You can actually go to Google and type in Nick Manning compilation videos
on YouTube,
and it's just like, I'm dropping loads on you.
If you don't want to watch it, you can see YouTube videos that are just the ripped audio, and that's all you need. And like, every girl sounds like, oh God, fuck this. What am I doing with my life?
So basically, I watched Sausage Party last week, and the villain is literally a douche, and he has that voice. They go, "What are you supposed to be?" He goes, "I'm a douche."
Oh my God!
Well, I mean, that's
so maybe they're modeling that after him.
Nick Manning would say, but like, it's like whatever he like. First thing that pops in his mind and what he looks at, that's what he says. Like, I'm fucking you in your skirt and you're wearing glasses.
He's not wrong. That's exactly what he does.
But that
I'm drinking some Kool-Aid right now through a straw. Like that? Like,
do I yes.
Well,
yes.
If he was drinking Kool-Aid in the scene, he would say, he says exactly what he sees. Like, I'm surprised he like doesn't look over. He's like, I'm fucking you. There's a cameraman on the side of me with a camera, and there's a light with a lamp. Like, that's, he just doesn't say that. But
the gaffer needs to move a little to the left.
But, dude, porn is something like
that. God.
But that said, it's the same thing that Ron Jeremy has, where people watch him for this comedic aspect, I guess. Rather than like, oh, that's such a turn on. Because, like, I mean, seriously.
He's such a boner killer, though.
I want to talk to the ladies that would, you know, watch porn in the 70s and 80s. What did they find attractive about, like, Harry Reams and stuff?
That's fair.
You know, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I don't think, you know, these guys aren't good-looking guys. You know, they were just bodies. But, I mean, women watched porno, too.
Yerp.
So, exactly what was in it for them? Because to me, that's a turnoff. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, I
because if I watch porno, I don't want to watch fucking, you know, Ron Jeremy. Like, I'm the straightest guy in the fucking world, but I'm going to choose what guy I want to see too, because I don't want to see fucking Ron Jeremy or Nick Manning fucking talking about dropping loads all over the room. Like, I want to see, oh, you know, that guy, he seems nice. You know, he's not going to say
anything.
That doesn't
get you off?
This guy seems like a guy that someone
should tell
to see their mother and meet the family.
Does this guy talk? No, he doesn't talk. Like, I might invite him over for a turkey sandwich. Like, that's fine.
Oh,
and
no,
we'll talk about the scene.
Smell like Ron Jeremy.
All right, ham sandwich.
All right.
But, you know, hey, we're in the fucking back room. We can talk whatever the fuck we want right now.
All right.
Well, there's other movies to talk about in the back room.
Bro, we got stuff to talk about, bro.
Well, is Nick Manning in any of them?
No.
God, they should do that. They should just get a compilation of Nick Manning's greatest drops. Just
it's every fucking every scene he's ever done. And he's still making movies today.
I don't understand how he's still alive. You'd
but
think
he's
if
like
you
still,
dropped
like,
that many loads, like you wouldn't be able to live.
Well, it's like, hey, you know, Sarah, we got a job for you. You know, it's going to be your break. You're going to be working with someone. Well, who is it? It's Nick Manning. Like, obviously, we know who Nick Manning is. The people in the porn industry have to know who Nick Manning is. Do you, like, think there's an eye roll or it's like, oh, okay, that might be fun? He'll drop loads on me.
I think he's probably at this point like a rite of passage. Not like a rite of passage as in like, oh, like you're so honored, but rite of passage is like, oh, you think you can hang in this industry? Let's see if you can hang in this industry.
How has
there's a bitch printer with Nick Manning.
He's amazing.
How has nobody done a porn parody of Empire Records?
With Nick Manning?
Nick Manning Day.
It's Nick Manning Day!
Holy shit!
Dude,
oh my
I
fucking
think you just
God,
might have $1,000.
I need to contact Joanna Angel immediately. Be like, I figured out your next parody.
Nice.
It's Nick Manning Day.
And fucking Nick Manning plays Nick Manning. He's
yes.
got
Oh my God.
This shit writes itself.
Not today. Not a Nick Manning Day. Just Ethan Embry shows up for no goddamn reason.
I don't get to drop loads today. What the fuck is happening? You get to drop loads tomorrow, Nick. Okay.
And just a girl pretending to be Liv Tyler just tries to seduce him, and then he just drops loads.
Yeah. Ethan Embry does need to make an appearance, even if it's just like a walk-on, like just, you know. But, oh my God, that'd be amazing. All right, moving right along here. To the final thing that we'll talk about in the segment. Now, they've been doing these kind of DVD box sets that are pretty well put together, like pretty awesome. They did that All Night at the Pono
Dude, what a missed opportunity, All Night at the Pono 2.
I know. So they're doing their second storefront theater collection, the Bizarre Art Theater.
That's right, Sean. You tell them.
So they did not send this to me.
Well, it's porno.
Because it's porno. Three disc DVD set. I mean, it's funny because I'm like, cause I'm reading the synopsis and it says like ghosts, goblins, and fiendish killers. I'm like, oh, and then I read up, oh,
with dick,
nubile starlets, and come deadly. And I start reading the titles: Rites of Uranus, House of
God, DC. Rites of Uranus. That movie, there's a fucking
Dr. Sexual and Mr. Hyde.
Someone gets stabbed in the butthole with the fucking candle.
Did you guys check these out?
Yeah, I did. I like the.
I didn't get through all of them.
What'd it be?
There's only so much time for porn.
Okay, so did you watch The Geek though?
No.
Oh my god, BJ, you have fucking nightmares.
Why?
Oh my god, it's
I'm so nervous now.
Give us a rundown of the greatest hits. Why should people check this set out, Brett?
Well, I think because I really was a big fan of All Night at the Pono. Like you're not going to see glamorous porn by any means, but you're going to see some weird fucking shit. And I thought that All Night at the Pono was weird. I love saying that. Was weird, but this fucking takes the fucking cake and eats it and then comes it out.
Oh my god.
So, like, The Geek. Let's start off with The Geek. I think that's the 7 p.m. Show on the first disc. All right, so The Geek is a Bigfoot movie that should tell you right then and there what the fuck I'm going with this. So a bunch of quote unquote scientists hike up to basically someone's backyard that looks like it's supposed to be a mountain and fucks, and they're doing scientific experiments by fucking. And then Bigfoot shows up, and he rapes people.
Oh, dear God.
Bigfoot is basically a guy in a gorilla suit where they cut off the hands and the feet and the face of the gorilla. So he's in this gorilla suit with his hands, and they're like, oh, wait, his hands are white. Hey, go play in the dirt. And that's what this guy looks like he did. And they're like, oh, wait, we got to have a place for his dick. Does anybody have any scissors? No. Well, let's just rip it open near the dick area.
Oh my God.
So he has like a ripped fucking suit near his dick. And he's, you know, rapes these ladies. And while the guys just watch in amazement that this is actually happening. But he's covered in dirt and he's touching these people and putting his fingers in places. And then he dips his fingers in, and then his hands come out clean. And it's like, wait, you have dirt in your vagina now. Like, why are you actually making this?
I'm really glad that I missed that one.
So, like, I'm watching this, and I'm like, wait a second. Like, porn is one thing, but this is just extremely unsanitary. Like, who is getting off on this stuff? So, anyways, The Geek is just chilling because I was like, there's a lot of fast forward.
Well, you started thinking about the sanitary conditions.
Oh God!
For one thing, and that's obviously like you're not and then, thinking about that during one.
And then I jumped into Rites of Uranus.
Oh God!
There's a lot of butt stuff, but there's a candle lit, and it's in some.
I need
of these
to take
butts.
That sound clip and use that again.
Well, a lot of isolate. Butt stuff.
I need to isolate that quote.
But yeah, it's just it's a movie about, you know, buttholes and satanic rituals and anal.
I mean, we are in Trump America, and that is where buttholes lead is just to Satanism. So,
hey, and he grabs some pussy. And then I watched The Scorpion.
God, I hate everything. Anyway, continue.
So The Scorpion is really awful, aside from a glorious moment. And I don't know if any porno has ever done this, but I fucking cracked up. So it's really gritty and dirty. I mean, this shit is shot on fucking 16 and fucking probably 8mm and pieced together with no fucking soundtracks. Like, basically anything that they can't release by itself, they put on these storefront discs. So you're getting, like, really, like, not even movies that are completed. Some of these movies don't even have cast listings. They don't even know who the fucking director is of these movies. They're lucky to know the fucking year. But the Scorpion, however, this dude is getting banged like left and right. There's a scene where he bangs a girl and then she leaves and this other girl comes in and he bangs her. And it's like, dude, you need to relax. You're going to have a fucking heart attack. But the end of the movie, there's these two people doing it doggy style. And he, you know, goes for the money shot. But all of a sudden, on her ass, it says the end. And the credits start rolling while he's ejaculating on her butt. And it says the end. And I fucking laughed so goddamn hard. I thought that shit was hysterical. That needs to happen in every movie from now on. So that new remake of The Mummy coming out with Tom Cruise, that shit better end with the money shot on the booty. This is the end. That's all I'm saying.
And with that,
Waltz of the Bat is really gross because it's just one dude who obviously probably directed the movie himself. Yeah. And he's like 60 and he's like, he looks like Ron Jeremy too. And he's just having the best day of his life. Dr. Sexual and Mr. Hyde is just like everything looks super unsanitary in these movies. Like, I mean,
because there's it probably was.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you have these like pornos from the 70s and 80s that, you know, there's a lot of grit and grime, but not in the sense of like what's around you. They just, you know, the people are, you know, very, very hairy. You know, like a lot of hair. There's a lot of sweat.
Everything's just sticking to you.
Yeah, it looks like it's really sticky. But that's fine. But then there's the movies where the whole set looks gross. And if you ever want to know why a lot of porn actors have sex with socks on or shoes, there's a reason behind that, people. And they're not
that's
doing
why
it because
you don't
it's a foot
have
fetish.
Sex in a movie theater at all.
Yeah, there's a reason why they wear socks and shoes, and it's not a foot fetish thing. Sometimes it is. But that's because this fucking floor is gross. Because 10 other scenes were filmed on that couch before yours. And in these movies, like all of these, it's like, ugh, don't touch the table. Her butthole's on the table. Something's going in her butt. And
I don't know if you're selling anyone on this set, man.
No. Because people like this stuff. I mean, you're paying a cheap amount of money for some really gritty and grimy porno. People love this stuff. They really do. I'm not talking to anybody out. I'm talking people into it. Like when you watch this, you're not going to get some, you know, fucking Naughty America bullshit or Brazzers.
No.
Yo, you're getting like, hey, dude, you want to make a porno? Yeah, sure. Who do I get the fuck? I don't know. Let's find somebody. And they pay him $10 and they have sex. That's what you're watching. You're not watching stuff that's well lit. You're not even you're fucking lucky they had a goddamn camera. You know, so I mean, they're fun for one. And I love Come Deadly, which you mentioned. A small theater troupe is menaced by a mysterious black clad killer in this rare hardcore giallo, which is actually the best one.
Yeah, I agree. That's obviously I can't say yeah, it's the best one because I haven't seen all of them, but that is one that I saw, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that one's great because they actually, I guess they tried to make kind of, you know, a movie.
I feel like they actually sat down with a piece of notebook paper before they had sex and was like, all right, this has to kind of make sense.
I'm going to say it was a napkin from probably the dinner table that they were discussing this movie with. And they just started writing down Tarantino style. But that's definitely worth a set. I mean, these storefront collections are a lot of fun because you're going to see shit that you are not going to probably see ever again. Some of this stuff was released on DVD, because some of these are the Something Weird video, batch, because I guess that's where they're getting some of this stuff, is their relationship with, you know, Agfa and, you know, kind of all of that was Something Weird video, because Something Weird video opened their vault, so they're doing all that stuff. So yeah, they're grabbing everything that they possibly can and, you know, scanning it and preserving it, because that's the thing is like these films are definitely going to be gone. Some of them had made DVD releases back in the day. I know The Geek was, because that's not like a lost film, but a lot of these are lost. So I mean, you're going to watch something that literally probably only a handful of people have seen. Because, yeah, these things were thrown in theaters in, like, these, you know, 6-hour, 12-hour block porno runs where people just come in and out, literally.
Yeah. And,
you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, even now, I mean, only a handful of people have probably watched this shit. And less than that have actually remembered watching it. You know? This is not like these fucking theaters were selling out when The Geek was playing.
Right.
And probably a lot of people walked out because they were like, oh my God, his hands are clean now. This is amazing. Oh, wait a second. That's because they were in her butt.
Mm. That's gross. Well, alrighty.
We did it, guys.
We did it. Cool. I think, I'm trying to see, like, Vinegar Syndrome, they just had their crazy Black Friday sale.
Yeah, their site isn't even, and their site's like, you can't
down.
Even go there.
It's vinegarsyndrome.com.
But right now you're going to get a... they sold some units. They're like, fuck it, we got to shut down.
Pull the code red. But they're available on Facebook and Twitter and everything. So,
they're busy.
Check them out. You can get their titles, of course, through grindhousevideo.com. So if you're looking for anything, Mike will take care of your Vinegar Syndrome needs.
So I think they sold out of the Sarno film.
What's that?
I think they sold out of the Sarno film.
Hmm.
All the Sins of Sodom. So I think they sold out of that one. So if you didn't grab it, there's only 1,000 copies.
Damn.
And then Jack Frost, of course, they had 3,000 of those. So I imagine those will still be able to. Amazon's selling them. You just don't get the cover that people are freaking out about.
Yeah, it's all good. So we'll be covering more Vinegar Syndrome stuff, hopefully, and I want to talk about their December package. And their November package was a bit confusing. I didn't really see a whole lot. I think it was involved with their Black Friday stuff with those limited edition ones. I don't know.
No, they had the Alex Dorenzi docs. Oh,
that's right.
They had Death Machines. They had Taboo 2.
Yeah. Okay.
The limited editions weren't part
of that. Okay. I was going to try to check on their site, but their site was down.
So we had, The Undertaker, which there's a fun little story behind that with me. If you have the Undertaker Blu-ray and you open it up and go to the booklet, you see a special thanks to, you know, yours truly.
What?
So
we should save that for when it comes out.
There's a fun story behind that one.
Cool.
What was the other one? It was Death Machines, the Alex Dorenzi flicks. I think there was 5 in that block.
I'm still waiting for mine to arrive. Hopefully they didn't start hating me and just...
You're not watching the porno.
Yeah. Maybe start watching porn.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Give Vinegar Syndrome some love. They're one of those... Whenever people ask me, like, what are some labels that I can confidently blind buy, like... especially horror titles, I always say Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow are two companies that you can feel safe blind buying. But Vinegar Syndrome has become one of my favorite labels over the past few years. And, of course, introduced to me by Brad. So, thank you, Brad.
You're welcome.
Check out Coffee Shop of Horrors. They will give you a discount on their website if you use the code SCREAMCAST. And, of course, buy your shit through grindhousevideo.com.
Only Grindhouse Video.
Check there first.
Fuck Amazon. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I always check there first, for sure.
Hey, I'm saying that, you know, Amazon's talked about a lot. But, I mean, if you wanted to talk about those fucking Arrow titles being on sale, fucking Mike had the cheapest.
Oh, man. This was a sale... It was an awesome sale that he had going.
It's over now, but
it's all over.
It lasted a whole month. If you didn't pick up something, then something's wrong with you.
I got some shit. All right. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. Find all of them there. Of course, you can check us out at the website. All of our social media links are there as well. And, drop us a line. Click on the contacts page. Drop us a line and let us know, what you think of the show and all that. Bullshit. We are selling pins. We are running low on the oily pin, so grab that while you can. And of course, those are over on the store link on the website. Otherwise, we'll talk to all you guys next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.